The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Susan Dellinger from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from Open Magazine, August 2019, Volume 20, Number 8. This is the fourth of five installments. On this month's cover, Oprah is wearing jeans and a blue and white striped poplin shirt. She's sitting on the back of a vintage Austin Healey convertible with a backdrop of an Italian coastal village. The big white O for Oprah magazine sits on a red rectangle in the upper left-hand corner of the cover. And let's start this fourth installment with part two of two from the Feeling Good section of the magazine from O's life coach, Martha Beck. And this article is entitled Free and Clear, Life Coach Martha Beck to Entrepreneur Heather Carter. If you want to get serious about your future, it's time to lighten up. After being laid off from her corporate job of 18 years, Heather Carter finally has the chance to be her own boss, but she's finding entrepreneurship a challenge. She has a boundless appetite for new projects, curating community art shows, developing products that encourage kids to celebrate diversity. But that's part of the problem. Her considerable enthusiasm makes it difficult to summon the steady, sustained focus she'll need to turn one of her side hustles into a second career. Also, the 49-year-old admits part of her misses the structure of her full-time job when she had a regular schedule and a desk instead of a kitchen table covered in sticky notes. Life coach Martha Beck encouraged her new client to get some perspective, an eagle's perspective, that is, looking at the big picture of her life like a bird flying above a landscape will help her craft a mission statement, which will be the basis for her daily to-dos. Is Heather ready to soar? Let's swoop in on their final session. Martha: Hi, Heather. Why don't you fill me in on how you're doing? Heather: I've made progress. I downloaded the Insight Timer app you mentioned, and I've been meditating. I can only manage 5 minutes in the morning and five in the evening, but it helps. And I asked a friend to help me start organizing my paperwork. And I made a vision board for the art shows I've been working on. It has an image of Charles White, who's been called the grandfather of many black artists, and a couple of his pieces, along with works from artists he's influenced. I also found a great photo of Chance the Rapper, who has a nonprofit for young folks called Social Works. He has his hands in the air like, "We did it!" For me, that represents empowerment and celebration. Martha: That's fantastic. A picture really is worth a thousand words. Words go to the analytical part of the brain, but images go directly to the meaning-making portion. How has your focus been, Heather? It was very helpful when you pointed out that the projects that mean the most to me are about acknowledging people who have been underrepresented. I think having a mission statement is really going to guide me. Martha: I think so too. The challenge for people like you, who are always generating new ideas, is that if you're faced with too many possibilities, you can get caught in an attention bottleneck and become paralyzed. Everything seems so exciting that it's hard to follow through on anything. Heather: That absolutely happens to me. Martha: When you stick to a mission statement, you're taking all those projects and painting a big red X on one. Then you keep your eyes on it, even if 1,000 other ideas come dancing into your head. It's also helpful to clearly rank your priorities. When I was getting my doctorate, I was also teaching and I had 3 kids and severe fibromyalgia, so what I could do was very limited. I listed the areas of my life in order of their importance, which is what the business world calls a forced ranking. First was my kids' well-being. That was job one, and if I had to skip a class to take care of them, so be it. So tell me, what are the most important areas of your life right now? Heather: My daughter and my fiancé. Also, my dad, he just turned 81. My mom died almost 3 years ago, and he lives alone now, so he's always on my mind. I know I should say self-care next, but meditating and exercise tend to fall to the bottom of my priority list. Martha, self-care is the foundation of everything else. How much sleep are you getting? Heather, I try to make myself get 7 hours, but I tend to stay up too late because when everyone's in bed and it's silent, I can finally think. Then the next day I wind up drinking caffeine to get going. I'm trying to keep it to one cup of coffee a day. Martha, I'd love for you to make sleep a priority and to get that quiet time you crave by taking a walk outside in nature. If you can put a chunk of stillness into your life, and I mean really deep stillness, it actually creates a jetpack of energy. Stillness is the ultimate caffeine. Heather, all right, I'm going to try. Martha, I'd like to do a little exercise. Last time we talked about how being at home all day is new for you. Your house is like a three-dimensional portrait of yourself. So this exercise is a way of looking at what's going on inside you. Can you describe your home for me? It doesn't have to be poetic, just whatever comes to mind. Heather, it's cozy, colorful, also cluttered. Organizing things is not my strong suit. Martha, what's your least favorite place in the house? Heather, I'd say the bathroom. It's just full of stuff. Martha, that's interesting because the bathroom is a prime place for self-care. Heather, it all comes back to self-care. Martha, when people make strong changes in their life, they often start redecorating parts of their house. I can work the other way, too. If you change your house, you may find that those shifts resonate in the rest of your life. Heather, I love that. Martha, my favorite Chinese philosophy book says, in the pursuit of knowledge, every day something is added. In the pursuit of enlightenment, every day something is dropped. If you want your life to be pure, drop something every single day. Your bathroom is a good place to start. Every time you go in there, I want you to get rid of 5 things. Heather, 5 things? Martha, put them in a box and tell yourself that if you haven't used them in 6 months, you'll get rid of them. Heather, okay, I'll try it. I don't know why I'm such a pack rat. Martha, the fear of scarcity is in our biology. We evolved in a time when people didn't have anything really, just sticks and rocks. Hundreds of thousands of years hasn't been that long in evolutionary terms. The idea of just throwing away an item we could potentially use makes something inside us say no. What's cluttering your bathroom, Heather? A lot of old beauty products and things people have given me. It makes me sad to think of throwing them out, even if it's just a bottle of bubble bath I don't use. Martha, you're hanging on to it because you're telling yourself a story about it. But that bottle has turned into an obligation that's causing you anxiety. Heather, I do keep things for the stories behind them. Like I have this empty perfume bottle. It was my mother's favorite, Joy. Which is interesting, isn't it? Martha, it's a way of holding on to your mom, but your mother's always with you. She's built into your memory, your cells. The freer you are inside, the more you'll feel connected to her. I promise. Heather, my dad is still healthy, and I'm grateful. As I think I mentioned in our last session, he's a visual artist. That's why these art shows are so important. I want to secure his legacy while he's still working and productive. I can't stop the clock on that, but the other stuff I can get to later. Martha, do you feel what's happening? You're talking about decluttering your house, and already that's helping you order your priorities. Heather, that's interesting. Martha, I found that the more I meditated, the more I threw away, and the clearer my mind became. You learn to call things from your attention, and the more you get rid of, the more room you have for joy. And I'm not talking about the perfume. Heather, yes, I have to train my mind to take a step back instead of being distracted by the next shiny thing that comes along. I think every room in my house could use a little attention. Should I be going through this process with all of them? Martha, This is your pattern, to start something and then say, but these things could be equally important. Let me fix those as well. That puts you right back in the attention bottleneck. Stick with the bathroom. Heather, okay. I do still have that pile of tax papers in the kitchen. Martha, see the way your brain is working? Okay, yep, I'll do that. But I also have this other thing, and maybe I should do it instead. Do you feel the anxiety of that? Heather, yes, it's terrible. Martha, I want you to notice that split attention feeling, which produces tremendous anxiety and keeps you running in circles. When you notice that feeling, just stop. And what's the least cluttered place in your house? Heather, probably the guest room. Martha, is there a comfortable chair there? Heather, yes. Martha, when your mind starts running away, try sitting in that calm space and taking very deep breaths. Then stretch slowly, like you're a dog getting up from a nap. And I want you to say, everything's fine as it is right now. Heather, everything's fine as it is right now. I feel really relieved to saying that. Martha, so that's your assignment going forward. I'd love for you to get to a place of less. Doing less, having less. Gradually, your attention will become a spacious place, and that is pure freedom. Heather, that's terrific. Thank you. Martha, thank you, Heather. You're a superstar. Having less can bring you more than you ever imagined. Martha Beck is the author of, most recently, Diana Herself, An Allegory of Awakening. We'll move now to the Let's Eat section. And under What's Cooking? Pancakes, they'll flip over. Every day is Saturday. Author Sarah Copeland serves up a fluffy and filling stack. There's a big picture on the page. We're looking down at a white plate that has a stack of pancakes on it, some vanilla yogurt, and then canned cherries with all their delicious red syrup and some sliced rhubarb. Sarah says, my family goes bonkers for pancakes that taste light but don't leave us hungry. And this recipe, a riff on Johnny Cake, a cornmeal flatbread, delivers the goods. The cherries and rhubarb are stewed with just enough maple syrup to temper their tartness, and their juices make the tender flapjacks melt in your mouth. They're great for weekends, of course, but I also love to serve them to my kids on the first day back to school. It signals that, yes, summer is over, but our good times together aren't. To save precious morning minutes, I whip up a big batch on Saturday or Sunday and freeze leftovers for weekdays. You simply take them out of the freezer an hour before breakfast, pop them in the toaster until they're warmed through, and add whatever fruit you have on hand. Topped with a dollop of yogurt, they are as sustaining as they are celebratory. Here's the recipe for Johnny Cakes with rhubarb and sour cherries. This makes 4 servings, 8 large pancakes, for a total time of 20 minutes. And here are the ingredients. 2 thick stalks ruby red rhubarb sliced diagonally. That's about 2 cups. 1/4 cup of maple syrup plus more for serving. 1 24-ounce jar of pitted sour cherries. 1 cup fine to medium cornmeal. 1 cup all-purpose flour, 1 tablespoon of sugar, 1 teaspoon of baking soda, 1/4 teaspoon of sea salt, 1 large egg lightly beaten, 1 1/3 cups of buttermilk, 1/2 a stick, 4 tablespoons of unsalted butter melted, plus more for cooking, plain yogurt for serving. And here are the instructions. In a medium pot, combine rhubarb and maple syrup. Cook over medium-low heat until syrup bubbles slightly and rhubarb is steaming but not breaking down, 1 to 2 minutes. Remove from heat, cover, and let sit until rhubarb softens but retains its shape. Add cherries and just enough juice to turn syrup red. It should be thick enough to drizzle from a spoon. Set aside. In a large bowl, whisk together cornmeal, flour, sugar, baking soda, and salt. In a small bowl, whisk together egg, buttermilk, and melted butter. Add to dry ingredients and mix until just combined. Over medium heat, warm a griddle or a skillet. Add about 2 tablespoons of butter to coat surface. When butter sizzles, drop batter in 1/3 cupfuls, 2 inches apart, and cook until edges start to bubble. Flip and cook until just done, 1 to 2 minutes. Repeat with remaining batter. Serve warm, topped with yogurt and rhubarb cherry sauce. For another seasonal taste, sub fresh berries for the cherries and sliced peaches for the rhubarb. The Peach Truck ships ultra-juicy ones, $42 per box, thepeachtruck.com, directly from Georgia Farms through mid-August. And now let's finish up the reading room for this month. And here's a short review of the book, The Need, by Helen Phillips. And the review is entitled, Us and Them. Molly, the anxious protagonist of Helen Phillips' hypnotically eerie The Need, is a paleobotanist with 2 small children and a musician husband who's eternally on tour. The novel is both an ode to motherhood and a nightmarish rendering of its pleasures and pains. Here's a quote. She could have sworn she was moving through a fever dream, a bright chaos to which she had no access. End of quote. Strange things are also afoot at the site where Molly digs for fossils. For one, she uncovers an antique Bible in which God is a she. And when an intruder in a deer mask confronts her at home just as she's putting the kids to bed, the bizarre threatens to overtake reality. Phillips structures her astonishing 5th book in edge-of-your-seat mini-chapters that infuse domesticity with a horror movie level of foreboding, reminding us that the maternal instinct is indeed a primal one. The next is an interview with the author Lisa Taddeo, and the title is called Carnal Knowledge. For her 1st book, Lisa Taddeo enters the realm of the libido. And here's the introduction to the interview. What happens when lust leads you out of your comfort zone? That's the question at the heart of journalist Lisa Taddeo's revealing debut, 3 Women. An investigation into the female sexual appetite that took the author 8 years and 6 cross-country trips to research and write. In the course of thousands of hours of conversation, Taddeo's subjects allowed her into their bedrooms, their hotel rooms, and the darkest corners of their hidden fantasies. O Books editor Lee Haber wanted to know what lay behind this journey into the erotic. Lee Haber, when you set out to write a book about desire, you were going to focus on men. What changed? Lisa, at first, I was curious to know more about the opposite sex. What arouses a guy and why? But as I got into it, I realized women were much more interesting on the topic. Lee Haber, how so? Lisa, men tend to think of sex in terms of conquest, whereas women often become more invested after their first sexual encounter. There are emotional consequences. So I shifted my sights to look at how want metastasizes and intensifies in the wake of orgasm. I became drawn to stories where passion was writ large, sometimes even reeling out of control, in which it was the partner calling the shots, dictating the narrative. Lee Haber, you ended up zeroing in on a trio of women, a homemaker from Indiana named Lena, Sloan, an East Coast restaurateur, and Maggie, who'd become involved with her high school teacher. How did you find them? Lisa, I met Lena at a women's discussion group. She confided that it had been years since her husband had even kissed her. Then she reconnected with a long-lost boyfriend from when she was a teenager. He was also married, and they began an affair. Sloan I'd heard about from a mutual friend who found her totally intriguing, as does everyone who meets her. I wanted to know where that allure came from. Pretty early on, she told me that she and her husband regularly initiated threesomes. I read about Maggie in a local newspaper. Though she was a teenager, she was the one being blamed for tarnishing her teacher's reputation. Lee Haber, they told you things they probably haven't told anyone else. How did you get them to open up? Lisa, I think we all want to talk about ourselves to someone who's not a friend or a therapist we're paying to listen. And in Sloane's case, she just read 50 Shades of Grey, which made her feel that maybe what she was doing with her husband and their lovers wasn't so out of bounds after all, and she was ready to share the experience. Lee Haber, did you meet other women in your travels who brought up 50 Shades of Grey? Lisa, yes. One was a woman in her early 50s who told me she'd started leaving a writing crop on her bed, hoping her husband would take the hint. Lee Haber, in the book you write, quote, it's the nuances of desire that hold the truth of who we are at our rawest moments, end of quote. Lisa, realizing that was key for me. Without videotaping or recording the act itself, it's hard to capture what it's really like, the energy in the air. But my subjects trusted me with the physical and emotional details of their relationships, so I was able to recreate what the moment actually felt like. I think we judge others, especially women, quickly and harshly if, say, we hear they're having an affair or that they have an over-the-top attraction to someone or something. It's immediately, oh, what a terrible thing to do. The truth of why we do what we do isn't usually black and white. The gray areas are where the most interesting parts of us can be found. And now we have something that is a repeating feature in the magazine called the long short story. Excuse me. Long story short. This one is entitled Comfort Food. It's one page. Her parents' breakup left 5-year-old Adrienne Berdour bereft. Then her mother gave her a recipe for solace. And there's a picture at the beach with blonde little Adrienne and her mother in a straw hat and sunglasses, the author and her mother Malabar on Cape Cod in 1969. Adrienne writes, my earliest memory of Cape Cod is riding with my brother in the back seat of our parents' Oldsmobile, the big blue car, we called it. 40-plus years later, I still take that road trip to Nauset Bay every summer. These days, in our family Subaru alongside my husband, our son and daughter buckled in behind us. The distance from New York City seems as endless as it did then, until a few miles before the canal, when the landscape starts to change. Maple trees and murmurings of starlings give way to scrub oaks and seagulls. The air turns brackish. Soon we'll cross the bridge, windows cracked, and follow the curved arm of the cape, stopping just past the elbow. In Orleans, where my mother lives full-time, and I've spent every July and August since I was a baby. I was 5 when my parents divorced, and we stopped making the trip altogether. My mother, Malabar, had fallen in love, upending us all. My brother and I would still go to Cape Cod, but our time would be split, 1 month with our mother, the next with our father. While my mom remained an expert consoler, able to assuage anxieties with homemade tapioca pudding, back scratches, and carefully placed band-aids, she also had one eye trained on her glamorous new life of dinner parties and exotic travel. My father, a staff writer at the New Yorker, was often distracted, likely absorbed in his latest article. Following the breakup, he fished obsessively, casting from the shore at dawn and drifting in his skiff during the day, waiting for bass to nibble. I loved him dearly, but the prospect of 31 days without my mother loomed as an eternity. Plus, I was secretly scared she might never come back. Attuned to my fears, even the unspoken ones, my mother suggested my brother and I each come up with a dish to prepare and gather around as a goodbye ritual. Malabar had studied at Le Cordon Bleu, worked as a chef in Time Life's test kitchens, and begun to write cookbooks. I would watch rapt as she conjured feasts that enthralled our dinner guests, silencing conversations amid sighs of pleasure. I could have picked any recipe, but I wanted something simple that I could help with and that would remind me of our ideal by the sea. I chose linguine convangoli. The first time we made that would become my annual farewell dish. My mother and I putt-putted through the harbor on our family's motorboat, powered by a puny engine. A bright orange life jacket encircled my neck as I lay across the gunwale, draping my fingers into the salty spray, lost in the coastal abundance enveloping me. It was low tide. That still hour marking the ocean's withdrawal and illuminating the teeming life below. Moon snails pushing plow-like over the sandy bottom, horseshoe crabs coupling, camouflaged flounder fluttering away from our boat's shadow. Our destination was the largest island of marsh in the bay, home to dozens of tidal pools. We anchored, walking gingerly across the prickly grass, and eased waist-deep into water as warm as a bath. My mother instructed me to shuffle my feet, which clouded the pool with plumes of silt. "When you feel a stone with your toes, pick it up," she said. Almost every lump I stepped on turned out to be a little neck or a cherry stone, but when something startled me, landing unexpectedly on a spongy sea cucumber or a crab crawling over my foot, I leaped into my mother's arms and stayed still as she held me close. When our basket was heavy with clams, we placed it in the bow of the boat and made our way home. Just a few ingredients were all it took to create my dish. Clams from the bay, garlic and parsley from our garden, a healthy splash of olive oil. Pasta dough slid through rollers and transformed into shiny strands. The smell alone lit up a synaptic pathway to the pleasure center of my brain. In every forkful, I tasted love. "Please don't go," I whispered to my mother when we were done, as I wiped my plate clean with a hunk of crust, but I knew she would. In the years that followed, Malabar became involved with yet another man, creating a rupture even deeper than the one before. By the time she married her new paramour, when I was in my late 20s, she and I were estranged. It took more than a decade for us to settle into a wary peace, by which point I'd started a family of my own. That's when I noticed something amiss at my mother's. Undercooked meat, charred vegetables, bread forgotten on the counter. She needed my help in the kitchen. That downward trajectory continued, and now my mother is in her late 80s and the last stages of dementia. She says, "Please don't go," and I say, "When will you be back?" During our long summer days, I clam with my husband and children, mining the very tidal pools my mother and I explored. We've forged our own annual tradition, a clam-a-palooza, at the end of each August. We catch an early tide to fill our buckets and spend the rest of the day cooking. Friends arrive in late afternoon and we serve them baked stuffies, chowder, clams on the half shell. As the sun sets, we scatter the empty shells onto our driveway and crush them under the tires of our Jeep, a satisfying crunch. My mother enjoys clamapalooza too, but it is when I make linguine con vongole, the dish intended to shore up a younger me for a month without her, that we're able to revisit, however fleetingly, a misplaced moment in time. The aroma of the sautéing garlic and parsley lights up her face as she anticipates a twirled forkful of pasta with briny bursts of clam. At the first bite, she closes her eyes in pleasure lost in the past. A minute later, the memory is gone. Adrienne Brodeur is the author of Wild Game, My Mother, Her Lover, and Me. And now let's finish up Love That for this month, which is the Great Denim Buying Guide. And we're looking at a page that has some different styles of jeans, some jeans jackets, and just the right underwear. The heading on this page is Genius Trends, the latest and greatest also do amazing things for your derriere. Go figure. And let's look at the underwear first in the hot seat. And we have three different styles. Whether you want extra padding, defining support, or a lineless look, these elevated undergarments punch up your backstory. And the first pair we have is a nude firming underpant with a high top that's just above the waist and to prevent muffin top, and then legs slim-fitting legs that come about mid-thigh. And there are two silicon inserts that go in the pockets for the butt cheeks. These volumizing silicon inserts come in 9 sizes from extra small to 5XL. Shapewear with removable pads, $49 at lovemybubbles.com. The next pair is got kind of a high-rise leg. It's a black panty, and it's a high top that comes above the waist. Ideal for high-waisted styles, and it has ruching on the back seam to lift and separate your bum. Like I said, it's shown here in black. Defining and slimming panty, it's $46 at squeam.com. And then the final black panty they show is kind of a cross between a bikini and a thong, not quite a skinny little string. It's got sort of a V shape to the top and very high cut legs. The Supersaw elastic-free low-rise panty is virtually invisible under jeans. A seamless thong, Commando, $22, wearcommando.com. And at the top of the page, we have pull-ons, please. With shape-enhancing action, these zipperless, no-bulk, elastic waistband wonders look like the real thing, but are way more cozy. So they do have that wide, soft, elastic band across the top. The first pair is high-rise with slimming waistband from Old Navy Rockstar 24/7 Jeggings. They're $35 at oldnavy.com. And they're kind of a medium dark blue washed with the gold top stitching and the wear patterns on the front of the thigh and at the crease at the top of the thigh. The second pair is a mid-rise with four-way stretch, Liverpool Sienna pull-on ankle, $89, nickandzoe.com. And these are a dark indigo with just a faint look of a little bit of a wear pattern with creases across the top of the thigh. And then the third pair, not quite as slender a leg, just a little bit more of a straight leg, dark, but some a little more visible washing. High rise with tummy shaping panel, Spanx cropped flare jeans, $128 at Spanx.com. And now, cream of the crop, do the denim on denim thing with a waist grazing jacket that's perfectly cut to show off your physique. So we have three different denim jackets here. The first one is from Ellos.us. It's a classic jeans jacket. But not crisp new. It's been washed, stone washed, to give you a wear pattern. It comes in sizes 10 to 28, and it's $53. The second one is two-toned from Etika, and it's $155 at etikadenim.com. It's a very medium to light blue washed through the bodice and the sleeve, and the dark, dark indigo for the yoke, the collar, the waistband, and the band at the wrist. And then finally, we have a collarless version from AMO, and it's $395 at amodenim.com. And it's washed quite a bit. It looks as if the collar has been ripped off, the waistband has been ripped off, and the bands at the wrist have been ripped off. Now, also on this page, two more pairs of jeans, Fab Finds, $50 and under. It's not just about the rear view. Stretchy styles with side detailing also punctuate your profile. The first pair is a medium blue. It's been washed quite a bit on the back side and the top of the back of the thighs. It's EV1 from Ellen DeGeneres Preston Skinny. It's $24 at Walmart.com. And it has a skinny little floral embroidery pattern down the side of each leg in pinks and white and green. The next pair has a gray and orange and black striping down. And this is a really kind of a light blue, well-washed look. And this is from Pop Sugar at Kohl's, side stripe, high-rise skinny ankle, $50. And when we turn the page, under the heading Contour de Force, we have a before and after picture of skinny little Elira Rodriguez. She's 27 years old. She's very slim through the top down to her waist. But then her bottom and her thighs are very hourglass, very rounded. And then she has skinny little calves. And so they show her from the side. She's got a regular pair of jeans on with a gray t-shirt. And she's got this big gap just above her butt. And then in the after picture, she's got jeans, that stretchy jeans that are cut at the waist so that she doesn't have the gap on the waistband, and they just accentuate her hourglass figure. The problem: Elira is all about embracing her curves, but her waist requires a smaller size than her hips. So finding jeans with top-to-bottom snugness isn't easy. The upgrade, excellent for hourglass shapes, the high-rise and lightweight springy fabric of these J-brand jeans makes for an excellent fit. And the result, Elira says, I'm obsessed. They don't make my butt look bigger than it is, but showcase it how it's supposed to be. And they show her in these form-fitting jeans that fit her waist just fine, and she's got some little floral strappy stiletto heels on and a pine green leather jacket that's very close-fitting. So we're looking at her from the back. She's looking over her right shoulder, smiling. The J brand jeans are Lena, and they're $228. The leather jacket's $1,300 from Saks Fifth Avenue. And the heels are from Era, NewYork.com, and they're $375. Now let's look at four different styles of jeans meant to cinch at the waist so that you don't get the gap at the back of the waist, and yet they accentuate the rounded bottom. Just as highlighter emphasizes your cheekbones, Notice Me form-fitting jeans play up your frame. They sit high on the waist and are full in the hips. The first pair has an Instasculpt fabric and a curved waistband that chisels you all over. Skinny, DL 1961 Florence Midrise Supermodel Skinny, $179 at DL1961.com. The second pair is even higher waisted, and it has additional coverage in back, which means that they'll stay up and stay put. There also goes skinny jeans. Universal Thread Core High-Rise Skinny, $25 at Target.com. Now the next pair, skinny through the legs, the style hits extra high on the waist and molds to the body. Super Skinny, Good American, Good Waist, $149 at GoodAmerican.com. And then finally, a straight jean, which has a couple of extra little darts in that yoke in the back. A series of diagonal darts creates a corseted look. 3x1 Higher Ground Jesse Straight, $275 at 3x1denim.com. And the last page in Love That for our denim guide. And we have Adam's Denim Care Tips on a sidebar. Advice on how to keep your precious new pair in top shape. Folding jeans can create creases. Instead, store them in your closet on hangers with clips. And the second of six tips, wash your jeans no more than twice a month and make sure to turn them inside out. Over-laundering will fade them and wear out the stretch. To get rid of odors and extend time between washes, put folded jeans in an oven at 300 degrees for 15 minutes. Or stick them in your freezer in a sealed bag overnight. The third tip, whenever possible, it's best to hand wash. Use cold water and about half a teaspoon of mild detergent. The fourth tip, new dark denim needs a little TLC. Before the first wear, add a half cup of white vinegar to the load, no soap, to set the dark dye so it doesn't rub off. The fifth tip, If you're a dry cleaning type of gal, do abstain, as it will weaken fabric over time. It's better to steam your jeans and spray on a fabric refresher for a similar effect. And finally, the last tip. Always air dry jeans flat so they'll retain their shape. If they're starting to lose it, put them in the dryer inside out for 10 minutes. And now we have three pairs of boyfriend jeans. These are just your classic jean with a rolled cuff. Loose can look good. Your butt won't get lost in these fresh takes on the roomy favorite. And the first one is low stretch and dark wash. It is Gap Mid-Rise Best Girlfriend at $70 at Gap.com. The next pair is relaxed straight leg with high recovery stretch, and this is a washed jean. Eloquy Essential Distressed Relaxed Ankle, $60, Eloquy.com. And another mid-washed pair for our third one, medium stretch with a slight sheen, Mavi Ada Boyfriend, $98 at Mavi.com. And white hot. We have two pairs of white jeans here. Finally, the challenging to pull off warm weather favorite is doable for different shapes and sizes. The first pair, stretchy yet sturdy fabric, is made to move with you, whether you're a size 00 or 18. These are a mid-rise flare with a raw hem. They're from Midheaven Denim, the ISA, $298 at midheavendenim.com. And the second pair is designed for tall women. They have a 33-inch inseam and an uplifting pocket design. And they are a flare leg with a raw hem and a horizontal seam at the knee. Skinny Ann Taylor, modern skinny, $98. Jazzy jeans. We have three more jeans to look at, and we have finished off the denim buying guide. Don't shy away from what's striking. Coated, colored, and animal print denim only accentuate the positive. The first pair is coated, so they look a little bit like a canvas with an oil finish. These are a nice kind of claret red. They are Legiance Margot, $265 at Barneys.com. And second, we have a darker pair. They're L.L. Bean True Shape Slim Leg, $59 at L.L.Bean.com. And then finally, we have a pair that's a real small leopard print. So it's that dark beige background with black and darker brown. Bowden Leopard Print Straight, $90 at Bowden.com. We'll go to the Feeling Good section of the magazine now and finish up a couple of articles, wrap up that section. And this article is called Stressed or Sad? Anxiety and depression have more in common than many of us realize. Diagnosing mental illness is a tricky business. To meet the clinical definition of major depression, for instance, you need to feel sad or hopeless most days of the week, or experience a loss of motivation and interest in things you once enjoyed, for at least 2 weeks straight. Sounds pretty clear-cut, but here's where the confusion starts. Depression shares a whole list of symptoms with anxiety, which many people think of as the other side of the same coin. To meet the clinical definition of generalized anxiety, you need to feel excessive anxiety and worry more days than not for at least 6 months. John Lorelio, MD, chief of the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Missouri School of Medicine, says, quote, "There is a huge overlap between depression and anxiety, and in some ways the mind doesn't distinguish between the two," end of quote. The conditions can even trigger each other. For example, people who don't find relief from anxiety might believe their worrying will never end and in turn become depressed, says Aaron Spar, a licensed counselor with the Baltimore Therapy Group in Towson, Maryland. But even when symptoms look and feel the same, they might be occurring for different reasons. Several treatments can help both depression and anxiety at once, including psychotherapy like cognitive behavioral therapy, and medications such as antidepressants like certain SSRIs. However, the approach, like what to focus on in therapy, and dosage or mix of meds may vary depending on which condition is causing most of the distress. We asked our experts to sort out some of the symptoms. If you recognize them in yourself, talk to a doctor or a therapist. And we have a table here, a chart, with five symptoms and anxiety description on one side and depression description on the other. So in the center, the symptom, changes in sleep or appetite. Under anxiety, it says, anxiety may cause tossing and turning at night, and sleep deprivation, due to any reason, can trigger more anxiety during the day. To cope with worrying, some people turn to food, while others may be too overwhelmed to eat. Under depression, research suggests 3/4 of those with depression also experience insomnia symptoms. Conversely, some people sleep too much. As with anxiety, depression can lead to increase or decrease in appetite. Now, with the symptom being social withdrawal, under anxiety, for anxiety sufferers, the thought of being around other people can be so terrifying that they start skipping out on gatherings, even those with close family or friends. Under depression, pulling back from friends or avoiding social interactions because you're too sad or exhausted could be a sign of depression. Under fatigue and anxiety, as with depression, feeling anxious around the clock can be both mentally and physically draining, leaving you burned out and exhausted. Under depression, your energy may be so diminished that even ordinary tasks such as doing the laundry require a seemingly impossible effort. Now we have two more symptoms, the next one being cognitive trouble. Under anxiety, memory and concentration may be compromised. Sufferers can feel like their brain never shuts off. Excessive worrying can also cause your mind to suddenly go blank. But under depression or cognitive trouble, depression can trigger forgetfulness, confusion, and difficulty concentrating or making decisions. It can seem as if your mind is constantly clouded over, especially if you're sleep deprived. And our final symptom, physical symptoms and pain. Anxiety. The body's stress response can shift into overdrive, causing muscle tension, shortness of breath, sweating, and trembling. Thanks to the brain-gut connection, some people also experience cramps, bloating, gas, and other GI problems. And finally, under depression, for physical symptoms and pain, depression can manifest as vague aches and pains, commonly in the joints, back, or abdominal area. One explanation, some neurotransmitters that influence pain are also involved in mood. When they malfunction, you could feel it in your body and soul. And our last article in the Feeling Good section of the magazine this month is You versus Opioids. Yes, there's an epidemic, but we aren't as powerless as we think. Another obituary for a high school classmate. Another alarming story about a neighbor's kid, a colleague's cousin, a friend. Nearly a third of Americans say they know someone who is or has been addicted to opioids or prescription painkillers, according to a 2018 American Psychiatric Association poll. Considering that nearly 400,000 people in the U.S. died of opioid overdoses between 1999 and 2017, the problem can seem impossibly daunting. But individuals can make a difference, and here's how. And there are four sections to this article. The first way, first, consider the context. For most of the 20th century, these painkillers were prescribed sparingly to ease suffering resulting from an acute injury, cancer, or the end of life. In the 1980s, as the medical profession increasingly treated pain as a problem in its own right, doctors started prescribing opioids more often. Then in 1996, Purdue Pharma began aggressively marketing OxyContin as a treatment for chronic pain. General practitioners without appropriate training and pill mill pain management centers churned out scripts. The number of opioid prescriptions skyrocketed from 87 million in 1995 to a high of 219 million in 2011. But as the drugs took over patients' lives, it became clear that opioids were not the cure some had hoped for. Physicians were advised to prescribe smaller amounts and curtail refills. As opioids became more difficult to obtain legally, some people who had become addicted turned to the pill's nefarious cousin, heroin, and drug cartels rushed in to meet demand. Foreign labs ramped up production of the synthetic opioid fentanyl, 80 to 100 times stronger than morphine and monstrously addictive. Today, Americans are more likely to die of an opioid overdose than in a car accident. And here's the second heading, destigmatize addiction. One important thing we can do to help those struggling with opioid addiction is to reserve judgment, say Ingvid Olsen, MD, and Joshua Sarfstein, MD, authors of the new book, The Opioid Epidemic, What Everyone Needs to Know. Olsen says, quote, stigma keeps people from seeking treatment for a disease that could cost them their lives. End of quote. Olsen is the medical director at Institutes for Behavior Resources / Reach Health Services in Baltimore. Olsen goes on to say, quote, we can support family members, friends, and coworkers in recovery simply by changing how we speak about the problem. End of quote. For example, instead of using the label addict, which is loaded with shame and blame, we can talk about people with substance use disorders. And we can think about those disorders, which need to be managed with medication, counseling, and care, not as a moral failure, but as diseases like diabetes or high blood pressure. And now, welcome solutions in your neighborhood. The FDA has approved 3 drugs to treat opioid dependence: methadone, buprenorphine, and naltrexone, which, when used properly, reduce cravings and withdrawal symptoms without producing a high. Less than 20% of people affected try these meds, frequently because of lack of access. Buprenorphine and naltrexone can be prescribed by an approved primary care doctor, but methadone can be administered only by a federally approved opioid treatment center, where patients take a daily dose under medical supervision. Opening new centers can be a fraught proposition, as evidenced by fierce protests from local residents. Sharfstein says, quote, yet when treatment is available in a community, there's less crime, more employment, and more hope, end of quote. Sharfstein is the Vice Dean for Public Health Practice and Community Engagement at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. He goes on to say, quote, we need to start thinking of centers as evidence, not of problems, but solutions, end of quote. And finally, make your voice heard. State Representative Denise Garlick, who was instrumental in passing Massachusetts' 2018 opioid crisis bill, says many lawmakers are open to hearing from constituents and also value the input. Garlick says her staff read every letter and listened to hours of public testimony in the process of crafting legislation that, among other things, expanded access to the overdose-reversing drug naloxone and regulated opioid prescriptions by making them electronic. Voters have power with their representatives, Garlick says. Start with local politicians. They're the most invested in your community. And under the heading Sharing is Caring, Recovery Voices Vote is an initiative to register and engage 1 million recovery-oriented voters by the 2020 election. Ryan Hampton, a leader in the recovery advocacy movement, founded the Voices Project to encourage people to share their stories online and change the national dialogue about drug dependency. Learn more at recoveryvoicesvote.org. And now let's look at the page called The Way In, your take on topics we're covering this month. And we have a handful of topics here. The first one is pies, sweet or savory? And your voices said 70% sweet can't be beat, 30% savory's more flavory. And then, do you have a workout buddy? 24% said, of course, we're all in this together. 76% said, it's just me, myself, and I. And the next question, have you ever paid for a stranger's coffee? 56% said, no, but I'd like to. 44%, yes, I love doing good deeds. And now, how often do you check out your tush? 40%, once a year maybe. 60%, every time I pass a mirror. And the final question, a knob that lets you control a restaurant's noise level would be? 75% say the greatest invention ever. 25% say, fine, I guess. And now let's catch a few items from the O list, a few things we think are just delicious this month as we wrap up this fourth installment. There's a luscious looking cake on a cake stand, and it says, fake it till you bake it. When you join Courtney's Cake Club, a box with a recipe card, pre-measured ingredients, a cake topper, and more shows up every month to make your family worry you've been replaced by an imposter who can actually bake. Single cake box, originally $55, now 25% off with code OPRA at shop.cakebycourtney.com. And then there's a box here with a dozen little compartments like a candy box, but it's called cut and dried. Crunchy discs of 100% natural dehydrated fruit, some dipped in chocolate, some plain, all bittersweet, are almost too pretty to eat. Serve them with tea and dazzle your guests. Dardamans California Assorted Fruit Crisp Compartment Box, originally $60, now 20% off with code OPRA at dardamans.com. And the Sweet Spot Tarts, when life gives you lemons and berries, let them be in the form of a truly scrumptious tart with a buttery crust and either creamy lemon curd or fresh blueberry filling. $45 each at IndigoJonesEats.com. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Susan Dellinger, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.